Hey, it's Friday, September 27th, and this is Beginner's Puck, the podcast for hockey fans both new and old. Hey, Deb.
Hey, Erica.
Hockey's, well, it's not quite back, but it's almost.
It's almost back. We said that last time, too, but now
sure
it's
did.
Even almost closer to being
it's
back.
Almost. Connor McDavid is playing hockey right now. This minute.
As we record.
Yeah. Apparently he wanted to play again. Like, they weren't necessarily going to play him in Winnipeg against the Jets, but he wanted to play. So
good
yeah,
for him.
That's happening.
Good for him. There has been preseason games all over the place. There has been some good preseason games, and there's been some dreadful preseason games. And as a fan of several teams, preseason, it's a struggle. It really is a struggle because the whole point of this is to not, I mean, obviously you want to win the games. We're hockey fans, you know, there's a
right.
competitive spark, but the whole point of the preseason is let's see what works. Let's keep our eyes on these people. Who's going to make the team? What lines are going to work? What combinations of people are going to work? And that means that sometimes you're just going to lose because while you want to win, the whole point isn't necessarily winning. And as a sports fan, that's tough to swallow.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, like, it's such a weird balance to try to achieve, well, probably for the team itself, but just even as a viewer, it's like, yes, I want to see more of these people that I'm not familiar with so I can see what they're like. I can see how they work together. But if you're getting a lot of those folks, you have a lesser chance of winning the game because those are not the folks who are going to necessarily stay up and actually be on your team. But how else are you going to figure that out unless you have them play during the preseason?
It's true. What is disappointing is like when you have a group of people that you think, okay, this is going to be a line, or this is going to be a pretty close to what we're going to have in the season, and they get blown away. I'm looking at you, Dallas Stars. Now, that's not entirely their fault, but it was the first time that we had Tyler Seguin and Alexander Radulov and Jamie Benn, I think, playing on the same line. I think they got blown away by Florida, like 5-0 or 6-0 or something. Like, it just,
that's right.
It wasn't even a contest. But, you know, again, just because your top line is out there looking good, not necessarily scoring, but doesn't mean everything behind them isn't bad either. But it's Stars. I don't care. Corey Perry, loving people. I know. Oh God, I'm still not over it. I'm still not over it. But yeah, the Flyers have had somewhat of a rocky result. And a lot of times comes down to goaltending too. Because in the preseason games, they'll do a lot of one goaltender plays 30, then they'll pull that goaltender and put another goaltender in and play the last 30. And you'll see an improvement or an escalation of not something quite good sometimes when that happens. So,
yeah, because you got to test out those goalies too,
right? Especially if you got a couple maybe on that you're not quite sure who's going to be your number two. For example, Mike Neuwirth was up in Toronto. He's a former Flyers goalie on a PTO, and everybody kind of thought he was a lock. Nope, released.
Nope. Yeah. Sorry, dude.
I am sorry, too. But my God, he was fragile. He was a fragile, fragile man.
He was injured a lot, wasn't he?
He was. He completely passed out in the net one time in the middle of the game. I mean, it wasn't just...
Wow.
Yeah, it wasn't just injuries. Like, he just... I don't know. And I was reading something that said, like, he turned down some better offers from other NHL teams because he liked the medical staff in Toronto. And I thought... Do you say that stuff out loud? I don't know.
Wow. I mean, that is a totally legitimate consideration for a hockey player, considering what they go through and what they put their bodies through. But yeah, saying that out loud when you have such a history of being injured does make me tilt my head a little bit.
Yeah. I'd be like, ugh. Well, they never said hockey players are smart, right?
Well, some of them really are. And then some of them not so much. I guess just like, you know, the rest of people.
Yeah. Vast majority of them are just, you know, kids that come up through juniors, barely educated, barely socialized at times.
That's true.
So, just
put them in that cage. I mean, bus, and they'll
be
fine.
Right. They're fine. They're all fine. cuts are happening. I know the Flyers had a deep cut. It was very funny because we are, you know, we're dealing with a whole new coach, whole new staff, new GM. I mean, we cleaned house, as we said. So
yeah,
it's like
both of us are in that yeah, lovely boat.
We are, aren't we? We're really mm-hmm. simpatico this season. Well, it was interesting because Elaine Vigneault made a comment after, I think it was the second preseason game the Flyers lost. That was a little bit of a dig, and I kind of made me chuckle a little bit. And it basically, he said that, well, you know, I'm used to teams who have made the playoffs and having to rest the vets a little bit, and we don't have that luxury here.
Yeah.
Yep. So calling him out. And so they made some pretty deep cuts earlier, I think, in the season than the preseason they may have initially thought he'd have to. But it's all good. It's all starting to come together. It's gelling.
Yeah, I think we're in the same spot. Like, you know, it's a new coach coming in, which means the players are going to have to learn an entirely new system. So you don't necessarily want to spend too much of the preseason figuring out who your team's going to be, because you want to figure out who your team's going to be quick enough that you can get them playing on this new system together and have enough practice with that in sort of a live setting. So it's a tricky thing. It's tough to balance.
Yeah, we should do a whole episode on the system.
Yeah.
Because everybody,
except that I don't really know what it means either.
The system, because, you know,
it's just it's different now than it was before. That is what I know.
And every coach has a system. And I guess, yeah, it's interesting because I was reading some stuff about Florida and Joe Quenneville down there. You know, like the players mm-hmm. getting used to the new system, his yep. system, that system. I just, you know, it sounds a little pretentious, but I guess, you know, everybody goes in and that's their coaching style. And this is how they prefer to play. This is what they think is going to be successful. And I don't know. It's mm-hmm. I'd like to sit in a room with a bunch of GMs.
The one thing that I did understand system-wise was when I first became a hockey fan, the Edmonton Oilers coach, Dallas Eakins, used his system involved swarm defense. Mm-hmm. And apparently that did not work for the players that were on the Oilers at the time. So I knew that was just like, you know, rather than playing a position, like everybody just swarm at the guy with a puck, I guess. I'm not entirely sure how that worked, but that was my first introduction to a system, and it was a negative introduction, I'm afraid.
It sounds like peewee soccer, that you just, you know, you just see, like, there's no playmaking. It's just children chasing a ball, like a whole pack of children chasing a ball up one side of the field and down the other. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I guess you could say, like, the Mighty Ducks, the television people had the flying V was part of their system.
Yes, that is totally realistic. Not okay. at all. It's not at all realistic.
Because they're not real. Okay. All right. So we are, I want to talk to you about this, because this is going to be a little Flyers and Oilers centric here, this podcast. We're going to get into more general stuff. But yeah, the Flyers are opening up their season, their final preseason game, and their season opener game. They're doing the European thing. They're doing they drew the short straw, I guess. I don't know.
Yes.
The Oilers did this last year. They played New Jersey Devils, mm-hmm. and they played some team in Germany, didn't they? It was Leon Draisaitl's home team or something. And then they played the New Jersey Devils. And
in Sweden.
Was it Sweden? Okay, it was Germany.
Yeah,
and Sweden.
They played some exhibition games in Germany.
Right.
And then I think they had the actual opener in Sweden.
Okay. Good thing or bad thing?
Bad thing.
Okay.
I didn't even need to hesitate and think about it. It was a bad thing.
All right, because this is what I'm thinking. So the Flyers are going to Switzerland and Prague. Like, mm-hmm. these are... Jaromir Jagr is from Prague. There is a literal museum in Prague dedicated to Jaromir Jagr. Like, these are not countries that need exposure to hockey or to the NHL. Why are we doing this?
I think that the NHL thinks that those cities need exposure to the NHL. You know, because yes, they have their own hockey programs, and now the NHL, I don't know, wants to have a higher amount of visibility in comparison to the hockey that's already happening there. I'm not.
I guess when all their best players are coming here anyway, yeah, we're like that little startup, you know, we're over in the States, you know. It's okay. We'll send some players over there to help bolster their ranks, you know. I just suspect
that there are some people who are already multimillionaires who are making some extra money off of this, and that's why it's happening.
It's got to, I mean, there has to be a chance to sell way more tickets than they could sell at home. I can't, maybe merch. I mean, I could say, okay, go to England. They're trying to grow the game in England, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
But
that means that it's more risky because it's not already grown there, I guess.
I don't know. Okay, so the negatives of this is you send these people overseas, you send these players overseas, they have to adjust to the time difference, and then they have mm-hmm. to come back and readjust to the time difference. And you're, mm-hmm. Hockey players have kind of gotten into a groove when it comes to playing in North America because they've been doing it for a while, whether it is in juniors or college or USA hockey program. You know, they kind of got the shtick down. But now you're throwing them in a completely different country with mm-hmm. completely different food, right? And now you're like, yep. oh, well, you know, they can get McDonald's, but whatever. But food is a huge thing to athletes. And all of a sudden yeah. you're messing with their diet. You're messing with their sleep schedule. You're messing with their just everything that goes into the mental preparation of the game. I don't mm-hmm. know. I can't see a positive here.
Yeah, I certainly don't. Because I remember last year that... And, you know, it's fair that, sure, for that one game that they are playing overseas, both teams have had to deal with a time zone change. I mean, in our case, it was a little bit worse for the Oilers because it was, you know, several hours, you know, more different than it was for the Devils. But still, everybody had to adjust. But then when you come back, the next game that you're playing is probably not going to be against a team who just had their previous game 8 hours time difference. So, you know, they are much more well-rested. Your opponents are not feeling that same amount of jet lag. And it's just, I feel like it puts the teams who had to go overseas at a really big disadvantage. And I don't like it. Also, it makes the times of the games really weird. So it's harder for me to watch. And right now, it's all about me.
Yeah. I'm thinking they're doing a couple viewing parties at like 1 p.m. next Friday, which, you know, I actually have next Friday off. So,
I mean, I could set up my phone next to my computer at work, I guess, and just try to sneakily keep an eye on the game. But that's not a great thing to be doing in my workplace. So I probably won't.
Well, you live in Edmonton. I think they'd understand.
Actually, you're not wrong. I could probably talk to somebody and maybe see if I could get it like put up on a big screen in a meeting room somewhere.
Right. It'd be viewing party at the office. Yeah, that ain't happening in Philadelphia. Oh, all right. So I mean, I guess it's cool because the Flyers are getting a little bit more, you know, the NHL likes to tout these overseas games. So they're getting a little bit more press. And
you might be gaining some Flyers fans elsewhere in the world. That is kind of a cool thing when you think about it on sort of more of a personal level, that there are people who have maybe never seen an NHL game before and maybe will never get another chance to, and they get to go to this game and one of the Flyers might just capture their heart, and suddenly you've got like a massive Claude Giroux fan, you know, living in Switzerland.
Yeah,
that's nice.
Maybe. We'll see. I don't know. So that's happening. Let's see. What else happened in the interim week since we last spoke? Oh, RFAs. We got some of them signed. Obviously, the biggies Marner.
Yeah, finally.
Thank God. Because honestly, mm-hmm. nobody hates the Leafs more than a Leafs fan.
That is sort of true.
They're like Doctor Who fans in a way.
Yeah, that's true. Nobody knows how to hate the Leafs like their own fans.
Yeah. So
boy, people were salty about his contract.
They were salty that he hadn't signed. Then when he got his contract, they were salty that how much money he got and how that basically, you know, he ruined the Leafs for the next 10 years because there's going to be no money. They're going to have to pay everybody else with like skee ball tokens. And maybe meal vouchers because
there's
no
money
left. Yeah,
and somehow that's his fault.
It's all his fault. It's all his fault because he's a greedy child who should be playing for free for the glory of the league.
Well, it is Toronto, Deb, don't you know? Everybody wants to play for Toronto.
Everybody, apparently. I don't know. I was reading, like, I was really kind of getting my back up a little bit about how nasty people were being. About this kid that last year was, you know, a shoo-in for the Hall of Fame, according to Toronto fans.
Oh, yeah. He was the darling.
He was the next best thing until he wanted some money. So anyway, mm-hmm. his contract was signed. It seemed that it did not open the floodgates, but it certainly more water was sluicing through than was before because we said Travis Konecny was signed, which was wonderful. Actually, I think he was signed before that. But we got Braden Point and Brady Tkachuk signed, which was big. Mm-hmm. Those were the other two of the other big names. Now, what's interesting to me is Marner went for, you know, big money, longer term.
Yeah.
He went for 6 years. While, you know, I think we're starting to, I don't know, we're not seeing quite for the superstars, for the big players. We're not seeing as many 8-year contracts as we were before, mm-hmm. which is interesting to me. So I wonder if the structure is starting to change. But
certainly the structure in terms of like getting paid for your what you're capable of in the future versus what you have been capable of in yeah. the past. We're seeing younger guys like Marner get big money before he has performed, whereas before it might be like, oh, your first contract is signed, you know, we don't know for sure if you're really the second coming. Mm-hmm. So we're going to give you like, you know, some peanuts, lots of peanuts, but still peanuts.
Right.
And then your next contract will be great if you were great. And that's not happening anymore because the league's just getting younger and younger.
So much younger. So much younger. And they're hedging their bets a little bit. I mean, Austin Matthews only took a 5-year contract because mm-hmm. I think he's thinking in 5 years, I might be worth more. The cap space will increase and yep. there'll be more money in. And that's the other thing. I mean, everybody talks about, oh, they're making so much of the cap, they're making way more money than Sidney Crosby, or they're making more money than this person. And it really comes down to what percentage of the cap they're making, because the cap has increased every year. So even looking at contracts that are now 5 years old, it's not really, mm-hmm. it's not a good comparable, because the cap space has increased. There is more money to spend.
Yeah, I mean, people like you know, Connor McDavid's contract from just a couple of years ago, and like, wow, that's kind of a bargain for like one of the greatest players ever.
Right. You have to wonder that and look and say, you know, gee, I wish I'd only take a 5-year contract because I could renegotiate.
No, Deb. No, this is good. We like a long contract for Connor McDavid in Edmonton.
As a fan, you do. As a fan of a player, I'm wondering, you know, at the end of that, how much would he be worth? Because it is at that 8th year, he's going to look like a steal, you know?
Yep.
So
sure it's,
but the Braden Point for Tampa Bay and Brady Tkachuk at the Calgary, they took bridge deals, which I'd like to talk about bridge contracts in another episode, because maybe not everybody finds it as interesting as I do, but I find them fascinating. And basically a bridge deal is the little contract you get before you get the big contract. Mm-hmm. And it's offered for a couple of reasons. It could be a team is not quite convinced that a player is ready for that big contract. Maybe there's some, they have potential, but they haven't quite lived up to that potential. And it's more of a little, we want you on the team. We think you have the capabilities. We want to see you prove it. Or it could be, in the case of Braden Point, an issue of this is, we need to take one for the team. And Tampa Bay has a history. They did it with Steven Stamkos and Nikita Khrushchev, where these players did shorter term deals. So management could manipulate the cap space. They could keep the players that they needed to keep. They could keep their core together. And it's mm-hmm. basically, you're telling the player, you take this contract now because we think we have a shot at getting the cup, and we don't want to have to lose anybody in order to keep you here. Mm-hmm. But look at our track record. We have a history of paying our players once that bridge deal is over.
Yep. And really dangling the possibility of a Stanley Cup in front of a player is not a bad way
nope.
to keep somebody on the line. Like if these are great players and you've got that chemistry and that certain something that is going to take that, you know, a player thinks is going to take the team far, then yeah, that's enough.
And you're thinking, you know, if Arizona was making that argument, be like, yeah, right, show me the money. But uh-huh. it's Tampa. You know, let's face
yes.
it. They have a legitimate argument going there. So
yeah, at least for getting to the playoffs. Last year they didn't do much once they got there, but maybe they have learned from that. So I feel like it was not a dumb thing for Braden Point to take a bridge deal and stick with this core.
And we can all acknowledge that ever since the Cubs won the World Series in 2016, we are in an alternate universe. And I think last year in hockey proved it.
Yeah, we jumped a track into one of the worser timelines. And
yes.
Yeah, sorry, Tampa, you're just a casualty of the Cubs.
Seems to be self-correcting lately. Mm-hmm. Who knows? Maybe.
We hope.
Fingers crossed. Mm-hmm. So yeah, and I'm not going to get into this now because I think, again, it's a little bit complicated, but it involves a lot of finances. But the way the Braden Point contract was structured was really interesting in that, you know, the money he's making towards the end of his contract will influence the money he makes for his next contract. But that's all high, you know, in-depth nerdy stuff that we're not going to get into now because it is time for Hockey the Good. The bad, the ugly, and the good, I'm going to call this.
I like that. Yeah, okay. That's a good order.
Because I don't want, I want to end on a more positive note. Mm-hmm. So the bad and the ugly, we got to touch on it, is the Auston Matthews situation that exploded in the hockey world this week. Mm. If you have been living under a rock, it basically at the end of the Leafs season last year, Auston Matthews and a group of friends were in his hometown, Scottsdale, Arizona, and got pretty rip-roaring drunk and tried to open a locked car of a female security guard who was patrolling the condo, I guess the condo development where he lived. An argument ensued and he walked away, pulled down his pants, mooned her with his underwear on, grabbing his buttock cheeks and spreading them, and basically was arrested for disorderly conduct. So that's bad. There's a couple bad things involved in that. And everybody's like, oh, everybody moons somebody in their life. And I'm thinking, well, not everybody, but no. I certainly know a lot of people who have. Mm-hmm. And if he had done that, it would have been like, yeah, that was really dumb. That was really dumb.
That was a dumb, rude thing to do.
It was a dumb, rude thing to do.
Not all he did.
But that's not all he did. And this is the part that's kind of everybody was sort of glossing over it. And this whole boys will be boys narrative is it was 2:00 in the morning and a very large group of hockey, drunk hockey boys basically came upon a female security guard and were pretty darn intimidating and scary and thought that there was nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, like it's just a funny joke to try to open up this woman who is alone, open up her car. Isn't it funny that there's a lady just sitting here by herself and she's a security guard? Let's mess with her. That the fact that that idea is okay with people, it just makes my stomach sick and my heart sink. Because there have been a lot of people who have defended that as, oh, that's not a big deal. If you've ever been a woman who's been in a situation that's even remotely like that, yes, it is a big deal.
It is a really big deal.
Not cool.
It made me think of, I was in college, I took a sociology course, and it was, we were at the particular module we were working, it was examining internalized prejudice, okay? And we were given a theory, and we had to explain our emotions at this, the scenarios that were presented to us. And the first one was, you're driving alone at night, you pull up to a stoplight, and a car pulls up next to you filled with big black men. How do you feel about that? And the second scenario was, you're sitting at it's late at night, you're in a car by yourself, you pull up to a stoplight, and a car pulls up next to you filled with big white men. How do you feel about that? Every single woman in the room said, the issue isn't the color, the issue is the men.
Yep.
Was the terrifying thing, because as a woman alone at night, you don't know what can happen, because let's face it, yeah, there's lots of statistics out there and saying this could be a really bad thing. And before we get listeners saying not all men, we know not all men, for God's sake. But
yeah, don't derail the conversation with that nonsense. Yeah.
Enough men that this happens, that, you know, and too often the argument boys will be boys is code language for women just need to shut up and take it. Women need to learn how to take a joke. Women need to not be so sensitive, blah, da, blah, da, blah, da, blah, da, blah. So yeah, no time for Matthews apologists. I like Auston Matthews as a player up until this point. You know, I thought, you know, he's an okay guy, but that kind of, it really upset me. Mm-hmm. So that's the bad. That's the ugly. Let's call that the ugly. Here's the bad. The bad was, according to reports, the police, his father found out about it, called the security guard a liar until they showed her she had a body cam on. They showed his dad the footage. Never heard from the dad. Never heard from his father again. Auston Matthews retained counsel. They were going to, you know, obviously try to sweep this under the rug, which...
As you do when
you do something really stupid at that age. What he also did not do was inform the Toronto Maple Leafs management. And his general manager, Mr. Kyle Dubas, found out about it via the Twitters, along with everybody else.
Yeah, that's bad. That is. I mean, I honestly feel like getting your dad involved and trying to sweep it under the rug is very much the crappy, entitled white kid thing to do, which I'm not particularly thrilled with either. But yeah, the fact that he was so immature and that his dad, I guess, was also so immature as to handle things right. this way and not come forward with this. In this day and age, have you not paid attention to the Ottawa Senators? Stuff gets out there, people.
That's right. This is like in the public record. Did you think nobody would notice? It's just really dumb. And to be fair, I mean, we talk about the entitled privileged white kid. It was. Austin Matthews' father is white. His mother is Mexican. It's Hispanic. And, you know, but this is like leaning into that, leaning into the privilege of mm-hmm. I have money and I have status. And can I make this go away? Yeah, it was just dumb. Now, to be fair, the NHL does not have a really good track record with dealing with off-ice issues. At all. I think the reason why this is getting so much traction was, yes, it's awful. Did he beat his wife and throw her through a television set? No, he did not. Did he have an argument like the Predators player did last year with his significant other in a gas station and threaten her life and get suspended? No. Didn't do that either. Was he involved in a paternity lawsuit where a woman claimed that he was supposed to pay me $1 million for having my third abortion, looking at you, Evander Kane? No, that didn't happen either. But this is Toronto, and you don't mess with the media in Toronto because you were under an even tighter microscope.
Mm-hmm. It is the worst place to be a hockey player in terms of scrutiny. Like I don't think there's any market that's worse.
Right. So, yeah, it's dumb. It was really dumb. It was super entitled. I hope he learns a huge lesson from this. I hope mm-hmm. his mother and his sisters smacked him around a lot because of it, because you just don't do that. And he had one of these very wishy-washy apologies where he apologized to his team and anybody else. It might have been offended, you know. It's like, oh, come on.
That's an unpology is what that is.
It really is. It really is. He needs to make amends. He needs to grow up. I'm hoping that he does learn a lesson, because you are in a market where this isn't going away. It's never mm-hmm. going to go away as long as you're in Toronto. This is going to follow you forever. And honestly, if the next time they play Montreal, a bunch of fans don't stand up and pull their pants down, I will be shocked. Shocked, because it was a Montreal Canadian fan who found the public record and tweeted it out.
Of course it was.
So, of course. Yeah. So Moonwatch 2K19. You heard it here, folks. All right. So let's move on to the good. I like ending on a positive note. Mm-hmm. Cammy Granato, who is an American female hockey player. She was a pro hockey player. She's the first woman to be inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame. She was the captain of the U.S. women's hockey team that won the gold medal in the 1998 Winter Olympics. She's the younger sister of an NHL player, but who cares about that? She is quite an accomplishment all on her own. Wonderful individual from what I have read. I don't know a whole lot about her personally because her career was before I was a hockey fan. But the thing that's really cool about Cammy is she was just named by the yet to be titled Seattle expansion team as a professional hockey scout.
That is so cool.
It is
Go
very
Seattle.
Cool. Now, last year we talked about the Toronto Maple Leafs hired an amateur scout, a woman who is well known in hockey circles at that level as an amateur scout. And that was really cool because, and we gave Kyle Dubas a lot of credit at that point because, you know, he wasn't only talking about diversity and inclusivity. He was actually putting that in practice by having Haley Wickenhauser as, you know, a hockey ops individual, hiring her, which I still don't know what hockey ops is. No, it wasn't hockey ops. It was, Was it hockey ops or player development? I don't remember. It was one of those things that they, those titles. I'm going to have to look it up now.
And I mean, you know, what do any of those things really mean? What does it mean to develop a player?
I know. That's sure. That's like that. They always hire players after they retire. Oh, yeah, we hired him for player development. Like, okay, what? What does that do? What does that do? You teach them how to, like, I don't know, rent an apartment. Little kids. That's player development. These kids don't know what they're doing. Remember, we talked about they're barely civilized. All right. So anyway, so that was interesting. And there was some conversation going around about what's the difference between a pro and amateur scout. So I thought that'd be a good butt the puck to talk about the difference in scouts.
I like it. It's time for What the Puck. Those things that everyone knows, but we all had to learn them sometime. So Deb, what the puck is the difference between a pro and amateur scout in hockey?
Well, you think about the words pro and amateur, right? You figure this should be a no-brainer, but I actually did see somebody on Twitter say, wait a second, does that mean the amateur scout doesn't get paid?
I mean, that is definitely a way that you could totally interpret it.
Absolutely, but that is not the case. Basically, the difference between a pro and amateur scout, you are still employees of the organization that hires you. I don't know what the pay scale is, if there's a pay difference, maybe there is, but it's just who you are actually scouting. Now, the job of a scout, obviously, is to go out and watch players, review tape, go to games, travel around, because you're basically a hockey spy, right? And you're gathering up intel and you're going back to your fortress and saying, these are the players that we want on our team. Should they become available? Or in the case of an amateur scout, because they are looking at amateur players. So players who are playing in junior, playing at the college level, or playing in the U.S. development leagues, who are not yet old enough to be drafted or have not been drafted. So they go out there and they gather all the deets and they watch the games and they talk to the coaches and they talk to other players and just, you know, try to figure out what this kid's career trajectory would be. And they go back, and that's how you build your draft list, basically, is by your amateur scout's intelligence. It's an important job. A pro scout does the same thing, but on a professional level. So they're looking at players who are playing on other teams or are playing professionally in Europe and coming back to their teams and saying, hey, we need to make a trade. I got my eye on this guy. He could fill a specific role in our organization, or
bring him in for somebody in for a PTO.
Professional tryout. We talked about that last week, right? Yeah, exactly.
Yep. So, yeah, we just randomly, even after we talked last week, randomly picked up a Russian player who is now on a professional tryout, just because the professional scouts with the Oilers organization had scouted this guy and thought he was good enough and said, hey, let's bring him over, have him hang out in the preseason and see how he does. He's got a heck of a shot. Let's see if he gels.
Right.
So thanks, scouts.
You think about it, it's a really interesting job. And I was actually poking around Amazon because there's a couple books that have been written by scouts and talking about the lifestyle, because it's grueling. You are on the road a lot, spending time at a lot of, especially the amateur scouts, spending time at a lot of crappy little rinks.
Oh, I bet. You know?
And you think about it, you know, it's how do you see players like, okay, Connor McDavid, Sidney Crosby, you know, Carter Hart. These are all players that people have been talking about since they were like 10 years old, right?
Yeah.
They made an impact very early. The buzz around them, they're generational players. The buzz around them was huge. But there's a lot of kids playing hockey out there, and especially in Canada. I mean, you've got a rink in every little town. And
if not more than one.
Yeah, exactly. And so you think, like, okay, you've got kids that maybe can't afford to play at that level of club, because you do have to pay when you're younger.
Oh, yeah.
And it can be very expensive. So you might have, you know, a lot of talent out there that maybe isn't on the elite clubs. And, you know, these amateur scouts, they hear some buzz, they hear some rumors, and they develop a network of other scouts or coaches, and, you know, keeping their ear to the ground. And this is how they find a lot of prospects. So, you know, you look at somebody, I look at Jamie Benn, for example. You know, he was drafted, I think he was 156th pick his draft year. I mean, he was way down there. Like, he didn't even bother going to the draft. They called him and said, hey, you got drafted. because he never thought he would. And but there was a scout someplace that looked at him and said, you know, there's something there. And, you know, he has been, for years, he was one of the top 10 players in the league. So it's a cool job. I want to do it, except I don't know enough about hockey, Erica, but I want to be a hockey spy.
Do you really want to be on the road that much, though, Deb?
Oh, you know, once all my kids are grown, yeah.
All right, well.
Once they're on their own. Can I be like the old lady hockey spy? somebody teach me about the fundamentals of a good shot. Like, I just think that would be really cool to
Nobody would suspect you.
They really wouldn't. So it's always funny you hear, you know, you always hear stories of, yeah, there were like scouts. There were scouts in the seats, you know, so everybody had to like bump up their game a little harder because they knew they were being looked at. And, you know, a lot of times scouts will go out and I guess it's more like the amateur scouts, I think, fascinate me more than a pro scout, because a pro scout, it's a known quantity. Somebody has already done the really, really hard work. You're now looking at something that's going to specifically benefit your team, not a player that you need to develop. So, you know, looking at amateur scouts and the time that they put in and the hockey knowledge that they have to have.
Yeah.
To look at somebody and say, you know, there's something there.
Although I do feel like professional scouts in Europe have a hint of that as well, because the European game is different from the NHL game.
That's true.
The ice is a different size. The style of play is not quite the same. So you not only have to be able to like see, you know, which of these players has the fundamentals, you know, who's got good hands, who can shoot well, who's good at skating, but who do I think has the ability to be adaptable enough to translate their game to the NHL game and excel at that, and who's going to be able to, you know, learn a second language if they don't already know English or you know, Canadian French. Like, what it's not quite the giant unknown quantity that the amateur scouts are looking at, but there's definitely some what ifs involved in that, which I find kind of fascinating.
Yeah, and if you look at, you know, we looked at training camps last week and all the different players who were there, the camp invitees. A lot of times those camp invitees are players who have either not been drafted yet or college players who scouts are looking at and saying, you know, they didn't get drafted. Or they're, you know, but we think there's something, might be something there. Like, let's take another look at them. Let's take a look at them and see if maybe we can get a gem for very little dinero. So it's very cool. I wish I knew enough about hockey to like, to be able to go out and do that, because I just think being a hockey ninja spy would be super cool.
I could picture you being good at that. You just need like the starter introductory course.
It's true.
On how to watch for specific things.
I know. I would be like, so like, I would be so stealthy. But then I'd like start talking to people and then my cover would be blown.
Maybe, maybe not. I bet you could carry it. Do it.
Life goals.
But yeah. Well, before you close us out with a hockey tidbit, I just want to point everybody to speaking of preseason stuff, I went to the Oilers versus the Flames, the Battle of Alberta, and got to see the two Alberta teams duke it out. And well, I got to watch the Oilers beat the pants off the Calgary Flames. But as we were saying earlier, preseason games really are not a great indicator. So this, I am not taking this to mean that the Oilers are going to be better than the Flames this year at all. It was, however, fun to watch, and I had lots of very strong thoughts and feelings about the game experience. So we're going to put in the show notes a link to my Twitter thread about it. One of the best parts was there was a group of Calgary Flames kids who were sitting kind of behind me, and there was this one kid who was just like, he just yelled out very loud and matter-of-factly at the same time. I don't know how he managed it, as only a 9-year-old can, I guess. He just yelled, "The Oilers are not going to win this game." And I was just, I appreciate the elegant simplicity of that kind of trash talk. Good try, kid. That's nice. And then, of course, later in the game, when the Oilers were up, like, I think 4-1 or 4-2 or something like that, like, he was just, this poor kid was just brokenhearted. And it was kind of like, I was trying not to be happy in his sadness, but it was making me laugh because he was just like, I just don't have any little bit of hope left at all. It was so sick. He was just, I know.
See, and like, they don't understand it's not a real game.
I know.
They want to hear that. They want to see their heroes win.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, it was fun. If you want to follow along with the fun that I had, you can check that out. But Deb, do you have a hockey tidbit for us?
I do have a hockey tidbit. I'm still really stressed that Patrick Laine and Mika Rantanen still haven't signed contracts. They're like RFA holdouts. Ah! All right. Deep breath. I'm moving on. Okay. I don't care about Patrick Laine, but Mika Rantanen was so good on the Avalanche this year, and I want him back in that fold. Come on, stop listening to your agent who happens to be Patrick Laine's agent because he's giving you bad advice. All right, hockey tidbit. Last night, as we were recording this, a new special started airing, or new series on NHL Network. It's 4 episodes, 13 minutes each, of NHL Behind the Glass. Now, they do this, I think they do this every year, the NHL Network in American television, where they focus on a team doing training camp. Mm-hmm. Or I know they've done specials where they focused on teams preparing for the Winter Classic is another kind of behind the scenes special that they've done. This Behind the Glass is the Flyers this year, which was very exciting. And I was actually at the first day of training camp and I saw them walking around in a really interesting camera getup filming mm-hmm. this. But it is, and it's not because of the Flyers. I would watch it for any team because I love the behind the scenes stuff. Like, we only see a very, very small portion of what it takes to be a hockey player, a hockey team, a hockey franchise. The games that we see on the ice, that's just that's the tip of the iceberg that goes into this. So this is Flyers training camp, Behind the Glass Flyers training camp. So we actually see the coaches come in, the discussions they have about players. They're talking to players, particularly Chris Stewart, who is, we talked about last week, the Flyers on a professional tryout. You know, talking to him this week about what it's like to come in and what he has to prove. It's really fascinating to get the coach's perspective, to get the player's perspective, you know, even veterans coming into camp. You know, they always say no job is secure. Obviously their job is secure. They're making too much money. but there's still lots of young, talented hockey players nipping at your heels. The minute you're in, there's somebody trying to take your job. So yeah. It's very, it's a cool thing. The NHL does some cool specials. This is a cool hockey tidbit. If you get a chance to, if you have the network, or it might even be airing on the YouTube channel, I'm not sure, but check it out.
Very cool tidbit to close us out, Deb. Thank you.
Thank you. I like ending on a positive note.
Yeah. It's always good to end happy.
Yes.
All right. Well, everybody, thanks once again for listening. And yes, you have been listening to Beginner's Puck. Remember, hockey is for everyone, especially you. Beginner's Puck is a Castria production for the Incomparable Network. Our catchy theme tune is Ephemeral by Sunspot. Have a hockey question you'd like us to discuss on an upcoming episode? Reach out to us on Twitter @BeginnersPuck or email us at beginnerspuck@gmail.com. And you can find all of our great show notes at theincomparable.com/puck. Hey, it's Friday, September 27th, and this is Beginner's Puck, a hockey podcast. I'll do that over.